Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Of the podcast to be named later. I am Chris Willis, and I'm again joined by my good friend Stephen Talbert. Stephen, we're closing in on Thanksgiving here. It's been pretty quiet the off season so far. I think things have gotten really rolling yet, but I hope you're doing well tonight.
What's up, Chris? It's always good to be on with you, buddy. Yeah, doing well. So, like you said, we're kind of just waiting, kind of keep scrolling Twitter to see if any news breaks or, you know, kind of Alex. I will say November is typically the month that Alex moves pretty aggressively. He does like to get deals done early, so I would not be surprised if any moment something drops. But yeah, just kind of a wait and see, and you know, enjoy some family and college basketball this week. But yeah, there'll be some news pretty soon. I have a feeling.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think once we get through Thanksgiving, and then you know maybe that period in between Thanksgiving and the winter meetings, might see some action there. I wouldn't be surprised at all. We're gonna do things a little different tonight. We've been kind of skipping our mailbag segment, so we're gonna hit on some the arbitration stuff, and then I think we're gonna dive right into the mailbag if that works for you.
Yep, sounds good.
All right, arbitration came and went. The deadline to tender contracts. No big surprises, I didn't think, for the Braves. In fact, going into that, it seemed like Tyler Matzek was the only guy that could be on the bubble, given his status with Tommy John surgery and the fact that he's going to be out all next season. So I thought it was pretty cool that the Braves signed him to a two-year deal. You know, there's a lot of troubling signs with Matzek this year, the shoulder issue, then the elbow. Just didn't pitch anything like what we saw in 2021. But I think there's enough track record there that if he's got a clean bill of health, you know, I think it's definitely worth kicking the tires on him again. And I believe that deal also had did that deal have a club option in it? I believe it did.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good – I thought that was a pretty good outcome for him. It was pretty much a lost season, you know, 2022 for Matzek. I mean, he was basically pitching mop-up duty, which is a far cry from where he was a year prior. So pretty interesting there. Mike Soroka back on a one-year deal. No surprise in there. They avoided arbitration with him. I got a lot of questions on social media about Soroka, thinking that the Braves might non-tender him. And, you know, the thing I kept coming back to was just, you know, they've carried him this far. And he's finally got back on the mound. You're not going to non-tender him at this point. But was either of those signings surprising to you?
I was curious to see what they would do with Matzek. I thought the nice thing to do is definitely to tender him a contract and let him rehab this year. And obviously, when you do that, you give yourself, you know, extra value on the back end. And they did that. They get, you know, 2024. For really cheap, and then I think they have an option for 2025 as well. So, you know, they did what you're supposed to do. You pay for the recovery year, and then you give yourself value on the back end. The same thing they did with Kirby Yates. So that was good to see. I thought there was a chance if money got tight enough that they might non-tender Matzek. You know, you never really know where they are in terms of their budget and what else they want to do. So I thought if money got tight, then Matzek could potentially be a victim of, you know, a numbers game. But it was good to see, you know, Matzek pretty much gave his, you know, his left arm for a Braves World Series in 2021. And so, you know, even if he's never the same guy again, what he gave this city and this organization, he deserves a chance to try to come back and be the guy he was, or at least a little bit of the guy he was. And, you know, he was hurt all of last year. I have a feeling. I don't think he was ever really fully healthy. And so, you know, he'll get all of next year to recover, and then we'll see what he looks like in 2024. But he's got guaranteed money. You know, he's made, you know, millions of dollars now in his professional career. And so that's good for him, man. That's I'm incredibly happy for him. I'll never forget the games he pitched, you know, in that World Series run, and especially against the Dodgers. I mean, it was just literally lifetime memories that he provided. So it's absolutely worth it. I was happy to see the Braves do the right thing. Was Soroka? Yeah, I mean, once he got to AAA, you know, and like you said, they've carried him this far, and he got to AAA last year, so they were always going to see what he was going to be able to provide. You don't non-tender him at this point. If he'd had another setback or, you know, wasn't pitching well at any point, then maybe. But once he got to AAA, yeah, you were always going to give him a contract, and it ended up being the same value as what he was projected to get in arbitration. So it made a lot of sense. And again, money wasn't so tight that they weren't able to do it for both these guys.
Yeah, this will be an interesting season for Soroka. You know, it could be a different story at this point next year, depending on how his season goes. So, you know, it's just good to have him back in the mix, though. I mean, because after these two seasons, it's just brutal, you know, with everything that's happened to him. So, you know, hopefully he can bounce back in a full off season and a normal, healthy off season. You know, we can see some of that promise that we saw before his injury. Bray's non-tendered five guys. I don't think there was any surprise in here. I guess Guillermo Heredia was the biggest surprise of the group. Silvino Bracho, Jackson Stevens, Alan Rangel, and Brooks Wilson. Alan Rangel and Brooks Wilson weren't arbitration eligible. They re-signed on minor league deals. That was something similar we saw last offseason they did with Jacyl De La Cruz. So, but they've got a couple of spots open on the 40-man now, which is important heading into the winter meetings with the Rule 5 draft. I don't know if the Braves will be players there, but if you've got a full 40-man, then you really can't even participate in the Rule 5 draft. So Jackson Stevens, Heredia, and Bracho were actually designated for assignment before the non-tender deadline. So that their being included was no surprise. But, you know, we did get a bit of news right before we started recording tonight. It looks like Guillermo Heredia is headed to the KBO and is going to get a deal. The report is in around $1 million. So good for him. It'd be good to see him, you know, go somewhere and get a chance to play. But it's going to be different not having him around, because, you know, he's been a staple on the broadcast every time they hit a home run or anything big happens, you know. So it's going to be different without Guillermo next year.
Going to have to put the pink swords right up there next to the panda head, you know, for retired Braves props. But that was sad. I was actually pretty sad to see him go. I thought they might actually re-sign him on a minor league deal just to get him back in spring training. But, you know, good for him. He got, from reports at least, he got paid to go play in the KBO. And, you know, I mean, that's what you got family, you got people you got to take care of. So it's never surprising when a guy goes and plays overseas if they're going to get a little bit of money to do so. So good for him. I'm happy for him. Definitely miss him. I'm actually I've written the season in review for Guillermo today. I was writing it, and it was funny because with his on-field contributions, he's not really somebody you would ever think about in terms of what they're going to contribute next year, because he really provided so very little on the field last year, but he was so incredibly vital off the field and clubhouse morale and dugout energy and, you know, just general camaraderie on the team. He was a vital part of it. So I am going to miss him. I'm going to miss the shenanigans and the hijinks, you know, the pink swords that are just the most random prop I've ever seen. And it's nightly hilarity. So, but good for him. I'm glad he got a job somewhere else. But yeah, the other guys, I mean, Jackson Stevens, I guess, was the kind of the minor surprise, because he was a contributor last year. But you know, there were some, you know, signs kind of later in the year that he was slipping a little bit. And listen, these bullpen guys really do come and go. It's just it's such a volatile position. And every year there's new set of guys who you don't know of before the season that contribute. And then you got to do it all over again. So nothing, I wouldn't say anything shocking in the arbitration, but good for Heredia that he went out and got another job so quickly. That's, you know, I'm happy to see that.
Yeah, and I'd be surprised if the Braves weren't willing to bring him back on a minor league deal. But if he's getting close to $1 million, you can see why he's going to take that opportunity rather than signing a minor league deal back here with what figures probably to be a crowded outfield situation. We don't know yet. We don't know what it'll look like by the time spring training starts. But I expect there to be ample competition out there. So, and the addition of Sam Hilliard also kind of made it look like the writing might have been on the wall a little bit. the Braves did tender Max Fried, AJ Minter, and Dennis Santana offers, so they'll be headed to arbitration. Team and player can continue to negotiate and can come to a deal at any time. The Braves have famously been a file and trial team. So once the offers are exchanged, I believe that date's January 13th. That sounds right. Somewhere around in there. They exchange offers, the Braves have typically been hands off and let it go to arbitration at that point. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they get a deal done early with any of these guys. You know, obviously there's been a lot of speculation about a long-term deal for Fried, but, you know, Minter played a vital part last season. And I think it was one of the better relievers in the league last year and just didn't have the saves to get noticed enough. Santana, of course, they just acquired from the Rangers. So there are three guys that we'll continue to follow and we'll have to see if they get a deal done.
You know, obviously Max is the interesting one. Max and Dansby, you know, for the last year or so have kind of been the two names talked about with extensions just because of, you know, how close they're getting to free agency, and obviously Dansby's already there. So, but Max is interesting because Max is the union rep for the team, and you know, I've seen it kind of speculated that he would be less likely to take one of these kind of really team friendly deals based on the fact that he's a union rep. And you know, the union obviously is not a big fan of those type of deals. They want players to go out and max out their value, so they push the envelope forward for the next generation of players. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Max, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Braves have approached Max about a deal and he's turned down. You know, they're always going to offer those really team-friendly deals first. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Max is the union rep for the team, and he hasn't. He's been one of the few guys that hasn't signed one of those really team-friendly deals. So that's going to be interesting. I really would not be surprised if Max ended up making it all the way to free agency. But we'll see. We still got time for that. That's still, I think, a couple of years down the road. So, but yeah, he's the obvious guy, and then Minter has been a monster. So we'll see if they can get deals done.
All right, we're going to go to a break right here, and when we come back, we'll do a mailbag segment. All right, we sent out the call for the mailbag this week. Again, appreciate everybody that took the time to send us in a question. I know it's Thanksgiving week. Baseball is the farthest thing from a lot of people's mind, but we do appreciate the interaction with you guys. So, Steven, I know we're doing this a little different tonight. I actually have questions myself, so we're going to alternate these things out. I'll ask you one, you ask me one, and then we'll both kind of chime in on everything here. But I thought the three I have right here are pretty interesting. So, but the first one says, what does Andrew Benintendi's market look like? I feel like his left-handed contact bat would be an ideal fit for a power-heavy lineup. I picked this one out because I know Benintendi was one of your favorite topics during the lead-up to the trade deadline and ended up going to the Yankees here. So, you know, what do you think about a potential acquisition of a guy like Benintendi?
I liked Benintendi all year. I really felt like, because he was a rental and wasn't going to cost a lot, that, you know, it was going to be kind of a transaction that Alex could pull off in the same vein as like a Soler or Duvall from the year before. It felt like a similar transaction. So, you know, I don't know how much he fits on this current roster. It would depend a lot on Rosario. What are they going to do with Rosario? We don't really still have an answer to that. The assumption has been that Rosario is going to be on the team next year. Technically, that's not a certainty. You know, they could try to move him or some of his money if they liked another left-handed better. If they moved Rosario, then yeah, Benintendi makes a ton of sense. You know, add another left-hander to the lineup, get a little more contact. He's a different type of hitter than what they typically have in the lineup, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing. There's actually some research on that about it. Is it better to have different types of hitters like that, or is it better to stack up similar hitters? And you know, it kind of goes both ways, but Benintendi is definitely a guy that I would be interested in if they could clear Rosario. I don't know how much Rosario and Benintendi together on the same roster makes sense, you know, because obviously right field and center field are covered. So you're talking about left field now. And if you sign Benintendi, it's not going to be a dirt cheap contract. He's going to get real money. So I would think you would sign him to play every day. or at least close to every day. And then, you know, what do you do with Rosario? He's making $9 million next year. Do you really just want that sitting on the bench? So that would be my only question is what happens to Rosario. But if Rosario's not around, if they do move him some of his money, then yeah, I'm all about Benintendi. I've always liked him. I think he's definitely more of a contact hitter. He doesn't strike out nearly as much as a lot of the roster does. And I do like getting a little bit less swing and miss in the lineup, but the first step would be clearing Rosario or him or his money in some way.
I agree with all that. And I mean, that's anytime anybody suggests an outfielder, the first thing I look is if they're left-handed, then to me, they don't fit on this current roster just because of who's there. Now, obviously things can change with, if you just cleared out Marcell Ozuna, perhaps Eddie Rosario could be the DH, the primary DH, you know, and then there'd be room maybe for Benintendi, but that's still a lot of lefty hitters there. So, but I'm like you, I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't hate it at all if the current outfield look changes between now and that signing. So, I think that it's a hard fit if you're trying to piece him in with Rosario already in left field too. So, but that's a good question.
All right, so we got a little bit of a rumor over the weekend, or actually last night. It wasn't even the weekend; it was last night. But it was from a pretty legitimate source, Joe Doyle, who writes for Prospect Live, and was previously with Lookout Landing and has had real connections with the Mariners for a lot of years and really knows their players and does have connections in the Northwest. So I saw this and I typically ignore most rumors, but this one caught my eye because I thought the source was pretty good. But Joe Doyle did say last night that according to his sources, the Braves and the Twins are two teams that have shown interest in Mitch Haniger. I think it was you, Chris, who brought up maybe for the first time or the first time I had heard about it, about the, you know, the idea of maybe going bigger in left field and smaller at shortstop. And I think Haniger was a name that we bandied about even the night we talked about that. But seeing a legitimate source say the Braves do have interest in Mitch Haniger, what do you think? What do you think about Mitch Haniger playing left field for the Braves next year?
I mean, I like that idea, honestly. You know, if that would be one of those moves, though, where I think you're bringing in an everyday guy. You know, he's been injury riddled. He's had a lot of injury problems. I don't think he's the strongest defender in the world. But, you know, he's been a solid above league average bat for pretty much his entire career. You know, and I think that would be huge if you could add a guy like that. Again, same thing with the Benintendi question. You know, you got to figure out how all the pieces fit. You know, if Marcell Ozuna and Eddie Rosario are both on this team, then it looks like, you know, maybe they're getting knocked into a platoon at the DH, and that's an expensive DH spot. But, you know, I think I'd read somewhere else, too, that Haniger's had a lot of interest. So, you know, I'm not surprised to see that the Braves were among the teams that's checked in on him. You know, sign me up because I really like him. I think there's only question mark in my mind is just the injury history. I mean, he's had some brutal luck injury-wise. We were actually talking about this in our team Slack before we started recording. But, you know, Haniger's weird. He played 157 games in 2018. He played 157 games in 2021. And then he hasn't played more than 96 in any of the other four seasons that he's been in the major leagues. So there's an injury risk there. But again, you know, the offense is legit. And, you know, I think it'd be a solid addition if they could get to that point.
And I tweeted about this when I saw the rumor for the first time, but, you know, there's two parts of Dansby's game that you have to kind of make up for if you don't re-sign him. And obviously it's offense and defense. And the offense, I think Haniger would cover pretty easily, you know, especially if you look at what Dansby is projected to do next year. You know, last year was pretty much a career year for him in every sense of the term. And I think Haniger would cover that pretty easily in terms of filling his offensive void if he didn't resign. And then you could potentially just go try to find a decent glove at short, right, and to cover the defensive part and probably be okay, you know, and finding a glove at shortstop is a lot easier than trying to find a star player like they might have to do if they don't do anything else. So, yeah, I like Haniger. There's definitely injury concern, but, you know, they have been sort of freak injuries. It's not stuff you typically see. So I don't know how huge a deal it is, but it is, yeah, it's a factor for sure. But I've always liked Mitch Haniger. I think he's a great player. He's, when he's healthy, he can put up a 4 or 5 win season pretty easily. He's got 30, 35, 40 home run power. So, you know, he's a really good player. And he's also been playing all of his, pretty much most of his career in one of the worst hitters parks in baseball. And so getting him out of that environment and to a place where the ball flies a little better in Truist, you know, you could see even more production. So I've said it before, but, you know, if they wanted to go smaller at shortstop and go bigger and left, then bring me Mitch Haniger and I'll be just fine.
Yeah, and it's, you know, he'll turn 32 in December. But, you know, he's not going to sign a, he's probably not going to sign a mega deal. Right. But it's not going to be chump change either, you know, right. And it may
yeah,
be.
Yeah, and the contract matters for sure.
Right. But, you know, like I said, of some of the ideas that we've seen floated out there, to me, this is one of the more appealing ones that I've seen. You know, I think he'd be a solid addition and would fit well in the lineup. So, all right, I've got one more. I've got another question here, you know, this is another one that's right up mine and your alley because we've talked about this a lot. But it says if Alex Anthopoulos can't find a taker for Marcell Ozuna during the winter meetings, does he just get cut? So I thought that was an interesting look. You know, I've got my opinion, but I want to hear what you think.
If Alex Anthopoulos doesn't find
a taker for Marcell Ozuna at the winter meetings, does he just get cut?
Well, I don't know if the winter meetings has any bearing on it. Like, I don't know if he would, you know, if he doesn't find a match in middle of December, if he would just cut him then and there, or if he would keep trying. I do think Alex, by this point, has a pretty good idea of what's out there in terms of bad contract swaps or, you know, if there's anybody out there who's willing to take the money if, you know, if you attach a prospect or, you know, I think by now Alex does have a pretty good idea of what the options are. And he's, you know, potentially trying to, you know, find different ways to improve an offer or, you know, sweeten an offer or get creative to figure out a way to get rid of that deal. But ultimately I'm guessing that none of those come to fruition and Alex is going to be left with the option of play him or cut him. And maybe I'm allowing my heart to speak from my head, but I really think they'll just cut him. I can't imagine that they're going to go through another season with Marcell Ozuna on the team. I could be wrong. I mean, it's a lot of money to just cut. Most teams don't do it, but I don't know if shocked is the right word, but I would be very surprised if Marcell Ozuna is on this team come spring training. And Alex might spend the entire offseason trying to figure out a way to do it, but, you know, when push comes to shove and it's time to either let him back on the team or just cut him, I really do think they'll just cut him. Yeah, I don't really see a team just taking the deal, but I do see the Braves getting to the point where they would just rather pay him to play for someone else than pay him to play for them. So we'll see. That's you know, other than Dansby, that's probably the biggest question of the offseason is what to do with Ozuna, Rosario, left field, that whole situation.
I agree with you. I don't think the winter meetings are necessarily the deadline for this, honestly. And in fact, I think it's going to go way, way closer to spring training before they make this move. And in fact, I mean, I'm starting to wonder myself if they can't dump Marcell Ozuna, does that cause them to try to dump Rosario? Maybe they're trying to dump both. I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, I think the thing is with the track record that Rosario's had and the injury he had last year, I think there's more value there. You know, Ozuna, again, just forget the off-the-field stuff for a minute. You know, he's back to, you know, pretty much underperforming his metrics again. And the only season in Atlanta that he didn't do that was 2020, and it was a monster season. So maybe you can sell somebody on that. But, you know, when you consider the lack of defensive ability plus the off-the-field baggage, man, it's still – and that large contract, it's still hard. And, you know, I wonder – I think at this point, like I've been predicting his demise now for, or being dropped from the roster since you and I started this podcast. But, you know, I'm almost to the point now where it has to become a numbers game where they just don't have, he just doesn't fit on the roster anymore. So I'm kind of wondering, he may be the DH opening day, but he's getting far enough into that contract now that, you know, if he's not producing again middle of the season, they may just cut him and walk away if they've got better options. But I do wonder, I will be, at this point, I will be really, really surprised if Eddie Rosario and Marcell Ozuna are both return.
Yeah.
If both of them are on the opening day roster, you know, and I mean, it may look completely different a month from now, but I'm saying this in November. If both of them are on the opening day roster, I'm going to be a little bit surprised just because it just feels like that's a place they need to dump money and to do some of the things that they need to do this offseason. So it's going to be an interesting thing to watch.
The one thing I'll add is I do wonder, because I think that's a really good point that you just made, that if they can't dump Ozuna, maybe they try to dump Rosario as kind of a, you know, sort of a secondary option. I do wonder if they try to use a guy like Manny Pena, who's got some surplus value just because, you know, catcher is such a scarce position in baseball, and the Braves have three major league quality catchers, and typically you only use two. I have wondered just kind of in my own head if they would try to use somebody's, you know, value like Manny Pena to attach to Rosario to see if they could get a team to take both of them and clear the money and, you know, basically using Manny Pena's value to move Rosario or get a team who needs a backup catcher to take Rosario's money just because they need Manny Pena. And, you know, I don't know if they'd do it, but I have thought about that. You know, it's so much easier to move a one-year, $9 million deal, which is what Rosario has, than, you know, 2 years and 30-something million that Ozuna has. So I think that's a good point. I do think they, if they can't do one, they'll push hard to do the other.
That's kind of where I'm at with it too. And the more I think about it, like you said, you could probably find somebody to take all of Rosario's salary, even as bad as he was last year. So
yeah,
getting him, you know, just because it's a one-year deal. And in the famous words of Brad Rowland, there is no such thing as a bad one-year deal. Somebody may be able to, you know, leverage. I mean, Rosario, if he's right, we know he's going to hit. You know, the defense is a suspect at times, but you know, it's just moving that Ozuna contract. It's just proven to be a very tough thing, especially when you consider the off the field stuff.
All right, Chris, got another question here for you. So, Jay Smith replied on Twitter and asked, with the Marlins dropping Brian Anderson, and the Braves having potentially a need for a right-handed bat that could play potentially in the corner outfield, do you have any interest in Brian Anderson for the 2023 Braves?
Well, it's definitely an interesting name, and that was one of the things I thought about when he first was non-tendered, you know, when the news came out that the Marlins were going to non-tender him. There's some injury issues there too, and I believe it might have been his shoulder, which kind of gives you a little bit of pause, you know, for anybody. The thing I was surprised about, like I looked into him a little bit, and, you know, when I was thinking Eddie Rosario in left field and then having a right-handed complement to him, because Anderson's played some corner outfield, he's played on the infield, but he's got reverse splits for his career, which was a little surprising to me. He's hit right-handers better than he's hit left-handers. I don't know if that matters that much. He's 112 weighted runs created plus against righties, 93 against lefties. You know, I like the idea of it because he could play left, he could play right, he could play third. He's played some second base. You know, so you kind of cross a couple of things off the list with a guy like that. It'd be interesting to see if he might try to take a short deal with a team that he knows he can play every day to try to show he's healthy and, you know, recoup some of his value. But, you know, I like him. That's one of those that, you know, I would love to see him in the mix, you know, and especially I think his presence would allow them to get a little more flexible with their lineup, not necessarily penciling in those infield guys every single day. You know, if you could dump Ozuna, you know, using that DH like you and I have talked about before as a means to get guys off their feet, you know, and give them a day off without taking them out of the lineup. And I think a guy like Anderson would really help that. So, you know, it'd be interesting. You know, I'd probably be happy if the news came out and they had signed him.
Yeah, and it would be cheap. I mean, I can't imagine it would, you know, a guy just got non-tendered by the Marlins, so I can't imagine it'd be that expensive. And I agree with you. The thought of him being able to play third base and first base a little bit, you know, to give Riley and Olsen a day off here and there is almost as appealing to me as his ability to play in the outfield. So I would love that. I would love that sign, assuming it's for a normal amount of money and not something crazy. Then, yeah, sign me up.
All right, let's go. Let's take another ad break right here, and then we'll come back and finish this mailbag segment up. All right, I got one more question for you, and I think this was the best one. Assuming there are no further changes to the roster, which position will have more WAR in 2023? Shortstop with Vaughn Grissom and Orlando Arcia, or left field with Eddie Rosario and Marcell Ozuna?
Which position will have more WAR? Well, shortstop, just off the positional value, gets a head start just because it's the more valuable position. And DH and left field both get a penalty because they're two of the least valuable positions. So, you know, even if you're dealing with equal players and equal talent, you would probably just pick shortstop just based off the positional value. In this scenario, I think Grissom and Arcia have a better chance just because I think they're more talented than Rosario and Ozuna. I have no hope for Ozuna. I'm not holding on to any. I know he's got some batted ball data that, you know, keeps people warm and fuzzy at night, but he's always had that, right? That's been a staple of his. He's underperformed his metrics basically every year of his career except for 60 games in 2020. I'm done kind of relying on that. So and then Rosario, you know, even if he's good, he's so bad defensively, he's not going to really do well in WAR. You know, WAR is very much it covers the entire spectrum of talent, you know, base running, defense, offense. So Rosario is not a guy that's going to do well in that, even if he's hitting well. So, you know, if it had been a different stat other than WAR, then, you know, if you'd done like OPS or something like that, then it might be a closer race. But when we're talking about WAR, shortstop is just so much more valuable than left field that I think even if they had bad years, Grissom and Arcia could probably beat Rosario and Ozuna. And if those are the two, if that's the left field and shortstop situation, then I'm also going to have some words, because that would be tough if that's the starting shortstop and starting left field situation come spring training.
Yeah, I don't think it will be, but I thought it was an interesting question, and I've kind of gone back and forth. Like I agree with you. I don't think Ozuna would have to have a monster season to really move the needle, and I think Rosario is probably capable of a 2-win season as a hitter. You know, and maybe that's a little high, but you know, one thing I was really interested in while you were talking, I looked at the Steamer projections for Arcia and Grissom, and they are very still, you know, obviously as projections go, but they're very high on the duo for me myself. I mean, Steamer's got a 1.1 WAR projection for Arcia and a 101 weighted runs created plus, which is notable because the only season he's ever had a weighted runs created plus of more than 100 was this season in 2022. Yeah. And he's only had one season where he had more WAR, and that was in 2017 with Milwaukee when he had two, and most of that was defensive value. So, but they're very high on Grissom. And
very high
on Grissom, and you know, it makes me wonder, you know, like I said, I've kind of been the low man on the side on Grissom, but it makes me wonder now that maybe I'm overlooking something a little bit. But you know, they're Steamer's projecting a 2.5 win season for Vaughn Grissom, and that's with solid pretty solid defensive number there too. So you know, Brace can get that. 111 weighted runs created plus, which would be slightly below what he did this season. You know, I wonder if he can get there with the some of the batted ball metrics. But, you know, the thing you like about him really is the lack of strikeouts. And it's the same thing going back to the Benintendi question. You know, it wouldn't be the worst thing to have a batter that to cut some of this swing and miss out of the lineup. So, you know, I think that's one of the appealing things. If it does end up being Grissom at some point, you know, that's one of the things, because it doesn't look like he's gonna have that swing and miss in his game quite as much as what Dansby does and some of the rest of the lineup options. So I agree with you. I think it'd be shortstop, and mostly just because I think Eddie Rosario's capable of a bounce back, but I just think Ozuna's going to drag that down. And I'll be honest, if he sees any time in left field, I'm like you. I'm going to have words, because I think we've seen enough of that they've got a full off season here and to be able to prevent that from happening. Even if there's an injury, they should be able to be stocked up enough where they don't have to turn to Marcell Ozuna in left field.
Yeah, the steamer stuff for Grissom and Arcia is kind of wild. Honestly, I'm, you know, projection systems are very useful tools. I use them all the time, so they're never to be just completely discounted. But I would definitely take the under on both Arcia and Grissom's steamer projection. But, you know, that's why we use them, because they're more objective than we are. They don't have biases, you know, and so they are valuable tools. But I looked at those as well, and it was an eyebrow raiser for sure. All right, Chris, I got one more question for you as well, and then we'll get out of here. So we've talked a lot about what could happen, but I don't think we've actually predicted what will happen. And Benjamin asked us to actually give a prediction as to what will happen in both shortstop and left field in 2023, or if you don't think anything will happen in those positions, what will be done instead of making changes for shortstop and left field. So this is not what you think could happen, but this is your prediction. What do you think will happen for shortstop and left field in 2023?
That's a great question. I've been here all year, the whole off season, and I mean, I should know better because I was in the same position last year, and we know how that one turned out. But I've still been of the mind that Dansby's coming back, that they're gonna find common ground there, and the Braves are gonna go that route. And I'm not as strong as I probably was a couple of weeks ago, but I'm still there right now. I may not be in another month or so, but right now that's where I'm leaning. I still think that if Eddie Rosario is still on the team, I think it, well, if they sign Dansby, I feel like they're probably going to look for a right-handed complement to go along with Rosario. Obviously if Rosario's still on the team, then, you know, maybe they can get some, I don't know that they would have the budget room to get a Mitch Haniger at that point. So they may be looking for a cheaper solution out there, somebody that could play every day. But that's where I'm at still right now. I think if I had to pick today, I would say Dansby's coming back to play short, and then they'll find a right-handed guy, a bat, to go with Rosario and left, whether that's Adam Duvall, Robbie Grossman, or somebody else that I'm not thinking about. I think Duvall actually makes a lot of sense, just because his ability to play all three outfield spots defensively. You know, I think that would work. I think the trick is just not running him out there every single day.
This is, I hate kind of being put on the spot, because I do, even my own brain doesn't like committing to stuff too early. But if I had to put a prediction right now on paper, I don't think the Braves sign Dansby. I think his price tag is going to get, I think it already is too rich for what they want to pay. I think they want to be in like the $17, $18, $19 million a year at the most. And I think he's going to probably end up commanding 23, 24, 25. So, just like Freddie last year, I think they'll get to a point where they just don't want to pay it. I think they will swivel to left field. I think Mitch Haniger will be the left fielder next year. I think they will then move to just signing some sort of, or trading for some sort of glove, you know, some sort of solid veteran at short, you know, Ahmed Rosario type guy, or, you know, Elvis Andrews, somebody not going to be too expensive. I think they'll use Haniger as their their big time acquisition to the lineup, and then go pretty small at shortstop, and maybe sign a, you know, another outfielder if they end up moving Rosario, which I think they could. But that's it. I don't see them signing any of the big four shortstops and going bigger in left field like we talked about a couple weeks ago. So that is my prediction as we sit here on, what, November 22nd, and that will surely be wrong. So we'll probably do more predictions, you know, when the Giants sign Mitch Haniger or something. So, but yeah, that's all I got, Chris.
Yeah, that's a good thing about being in control of the show. We can always come back and do our own predictions again later and pretend this one never happened. You know,
those are just our November predictions.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, everybody's going to have the receipts still, but, you know, we can do what we want as far as that goes. But, you know, I'm getting closer to what you're thinking, and what I think what's happening now is you're starting to see a lot of these teams that are losing these big name shortstops starting to circle on Dansby, and that's probably not a good thing. You know, I have said all along, I think you're right. I think that $22 million per season, that's kind of where they've kind of put their stick in the ground, so to speak. So I do wonder. I feel like if he does come back, you know, maybe he has to leave a little money on the table. And, you know, and obviously, you know, that was kind of the case, I think. Well, not really. It really wasn't the same situation for Freddie. But, you know, that's what, you know, and talking about free agent history with the Braves, you know, Chipper Jones famously did that a couple of times throughout his tenure here. So, you know, it's a different time, different era. Different players association, so we'll have to see how it plays out. But you know, if they do have to pivot, I think the way you laid it out would be a good option, especially if you can add a guy like Elvis Andrus or Rosario and keep Orlando Arcia kind of as the utility guy, and then you know play Grissom at Gwinnett. And try to figure out what you've got there and whether if he can handle the position, you know, and then you can in next offseason, you can be in the same. You'll have a better idea of which way to go from that point. So I think that's good. But I think that's going to wrap us up today. You know, we hope every one of you has a good Thanksgiving holiday and a good rest of the week. We should be back next week, I think. That's all I've got. You got anything else you want to plug, Steven?
Nope. Everybody have a happy Thanksgiving. Go enjoy some family time or some food time or football or basketball or whatever it is you do on Thanksgiving. Yeah, go have a good one. I think I'm around next week, so I think we should be back next week. But we'll have some content on the site one way or the other, whether it's us or one of the other shows. Obviously, we've got Brad and Scott and we've got Sean. So we've got plenty of content on the network coming. So make sure to follow along, subscribe, tell your friends, check out the site, and happy Thanksgiving.